Welcome to this special edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with legendary pianist and composer Randy Weston. During a candid interview about his life, music, and what motivates him to be such a force in jazz, he wove together a deeply memorable narrative about not only why it's key to celebrate jazz, but to celebrate the cool of simply being alive. From stories of growing up in Brooklyn and experiencing the pulse of music, all kinds of music at that time, Miles Davis visiting his restaurant, how the swing of Africa made jazz and continues to refine the craft. This is another very cool interview with a legend that imparts wisdom, humility, and grace, like a good jazz song. Here's the Honorable Mr. Randy Weston. Please dig it the most.
First of all, thank you very much for getting in touch with me and allowing us to have a minute. So let me go ahead and ask you, first of all, what has been going on with you lately?
Well, so many things, you know. I'm working on a new suite based upon seven ancient African queens, going way back to ancient times, you know.
Yeah.
I'm working on that, and we also did a wonderful concert for James Reese Europe, and the first one to take the music to Europe and France, and a great history. And we used tuba and banjo. We tried to capture the sound of 1911, cool. 1912. And doing some concerts, I go to Switzerland Tuesday. I play a concert in Shiazu with the quartet, T.K. Blue, Alex Blake, and Neil Clark. And then I go to Senegal, and then I'm going to spend time with the traditional people. And I'm doing what I've always wanted to do, even when I was a kid, simply document the elders, the old people, you know. But there's secrets of music, you know. So I'm going to spend time in Senegal in February, interviewing some of the traditional people.
Wonderful.
African music.
Right on. So let me go to the beginning of your life. You grew up in Brooklyn. That had to be a playground of jazz for a young mind to wrap your head around.
Oh, it was everything. You know, it wasn't just jazz. It was everything. Number one, we had the dance halls, you know. So the big bands, you could dance to the music. Then you had the blues clubs on the corner. You had the Calypso. Dances and carnivals. You had the black church on Sunday. You know. You had concerts of European classical music. So Brooklyn was so rich, you know. And during that time, music was required in school. You had to study music. They took the music out of the schools, you know.
Yeah.
So culturally speaking, very rich.
Absolutely. So when you were growing up, you saw Basie, Nat King Cole, Art Tatum. But from what I understand, Thelonious Monk was the one that moved you the most. Why was that?
It's spirit. You can't explain why. He had something about that I love. You know, I've always been in love with sound in music, especially in our music, you know. Uh-huh. And people like Coleman Hawkins and Tatum and Louis Armstrong, you know, they're not only great musicians, but they have a certain original sound, you know.
Yeah.
It came from that love of sound, you know.
Yeah.
So it's taken me in that direction all my life, you know, trying to understand more about the sound of the jazz.
Beautiful. So after you served in the Army during World War II, you had a lot of people that would come into your restaurant that was bebop musicians. What was that like?
Oh, it was wonderful. We were open 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. We had a gallery in the back of the restaurant, you know, and the articles on Sarah Vaughan or Duke Ellington, whoever. And Max Roach lived nearby. It was my father's restaurant originally, and I took it over when he moved downtown, Brooklyn. So the next one, I was little, I meet Charlie Parker and Dizzy and Miles, George Russell, and listening to Max and teaching me about the older drummers, you know, people like Baby Dodds and Sid Catlett, Joe Jones, you know. And he had music from Haiti, from Cuba. So, you know, between the restaurant, musicians would come there all the time. I wasn't a professional musician. I was making local gigs. But it was wonderful because everybody was there. Miles Davis was there.
Wow. Know?
And everybody come by and sit down and drink coffee and whatnot. who's better, Colton Hawkins or Leslie Young? For example, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was wonderful, wonderful.
That's cool. That had to be an education in itself. That's a doctorate degree right there.
Ah, my goodness. You know, where I live, right around the corner from the restaurant, right in front of my house, was where Eddie A. would live.
Wow.
People may not know Eddie. Eddie was a master pianist, you know?
Yeah.
So when I'm taking a break in the restaurant, I go to sit with Eddie A. with me. He had to tell me all these stories about Atlanta, you know, about the history of this music. I was very, very lucky, very blessed to meet some incredible people through the music, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So how much of your Jamaican roots influenced the way you play and approach music?
Well, my dad, he was very Afrocentric. He was just an African, that's it. He was born in Panama, influenced by Marcus Garvey. He spent time in Cuba, came to Brooklyn, met my mom from Virginia, producer Randy Weston. But my dad, he always talked about ancient African civilization, but nobody was doing that. There's only a few. Mm-hmm. We had some in the neighborhood, you know. But basically, Africa was after colonialism. Africa was always after slavery. Mm-hmm. But nobody was talking about the empires, you see. So Pop would always talk about Timbuktu and the great empires of Egypt, you know. And he encouraged me to go to the library and the museums. So I was always reading about ancient cultures, you see. Yeah. And not just African, Asian, too. I was just fascinated what happened before us, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So your first recording in 1954 plays Cole Porter in a modern mood. What kind of leap was that for you musically and personally?
Well, I was frightened. That's number one. With my first recording, and I had been playing trio, you know, up in the Berkshires, and Dewey Grower and Orrin Keatings, who owned Riverside Records, they heard me up there. They wanted to record me, but they wanted to record me piano solo. Because I was playing some songs, but I never considered myself a solo pianist. Working in hotels around the Berkshires and hearing all this wonderful music, you know. So anyhow, they couldn't afford to do that. So we compromised for piano and string bass. As my very first recording, of course, I was nervous. I'd never made a record before.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite composers was Cole Porter. You know, I always liked his music, you know. So that's because they wanted me to do a popular American composer, you know. I chose Cole Porter. And myself and Sam Gill, the bassist, we did my first recording. And that's how that happened.
Right on. So in those early years, too, you played with Cecil Payne and Kenny Dorham. What was that like? What did you learn from playing with them?
Take you to school. Take you to school. Why? Because for me, that period, which I call our royalty, you don't find people like that anymore. They did something with those instruments nobody else did before. Nobody had a sound on a baritone saxophone like Cecil Payne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was an incredible improviser, but his sound was unique on the baritone.
Yeah.
Back to sound again, you know.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can he do it? Also, what a sound on the trumpet.
Yeah.
For me, Kenny Dorham was equal to Miles Davis, without question.
Yeah.
On the same level as Miles, you know.
Yeah.
And he had a completely unique sound. And when I finally had an opportunity to record in 1959 with the high master Coleman Hawkins and Kenny Dorham, and they played my music, I was so happy, Joe. I was thrilled. Two of my heroes playing my music.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, I'm going to move into the late 60s here, when you went to Africa to live and travel. How did that impact the way you saw America and the way you approached music?
Well, my life has always been kind of a spiritual absorption. It's like being around people that are absorbing spiritually. Mm-hmm. And watching and listening. That's how we grew up. We as kids, you know, growing up in this time, but we always loved to hang out with the old people.
Yeah.
and they'd tell us all these stories, you know. We used to love it. So I went to Africa for the same. I said, I want to understand more about African people, African civilization, my ancestors, my ancestor home. Who were these people? And I had collected music before. I had music from the Congo. I collected music from West Africa. Had many influences, Riverside Records, Bill Grau and Orange Gate News. They had LPs of music in West Africa, music in Ethiopia, traditional music, you know.
Yeah.
You see. Yeah, so it's going to the continent and hearing it real live. It's incredible music because the music describes Africa itself. And Africa is such a powerful, rich continent. Before man ever arrived,
yeah.
That continent is unbelievable. And it swings, man. The bird swings, the animal swings. Everybody swings. We got that certain rhythm.
Yeah.
And so the music that's created it, that's why it's so powerful.
Yeah.
And despite the fact, for me, those of us who have taken away from Africa, we still maintain that cultural, spiritual memory.
Yeah.
We're still in us. So whenever we come in contact, we put that African pulse into it, whether it's a tin can or a trombone or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm still trying to understand more about this music. It is so magical and spiritual. Every other day, Jill, I listen to Louis Armstrong. Mm-hmm. Like I had never heard Louis before.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
And I'm hearing things I didn't hear before.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's really
cool. You know,
cool.
And I say, wow, those cats create this music, man.
Yeah. That's cool, man. That's,
you know?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That is amazing.
Art Tatum and Earl Hines and Duke Ellington and Monk and Count Basie. I can talk to each one of them guys just by their sound.
Yeah.
They sit down to the piano and get a different sound. Each one of them has the same piano. They don't grow in it.
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, that is. That's amazing. That's great.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So I've been listening to Tatum and Louie and Ben Webster and Carl Hawk and all those people. I said, oh, man. I realize now what a great history we have in this music. And I do my best to try to tell people to understand more the spiritual and holistic power of this music and what it's done, how much love it's given. Everybody, this music is all over the planet.
Yeah,
it's incredible. Yeah,
it is. So you've been prolific in your career. You've had a lot of different periods of creativity. What period was really huge for you in creating?
Oh, definitely the early '60s.
Yeah,
and late '50s. Yeah, and the reason for that was because all the heavyweights were alive. Yeah, you know what I mean? The energy was incredible. I mean, incredible pianists. I mean, young cats, you know, Bobby Timmons. I go on. You know, and Wade Leggy and Art Farmer. It was a tremendous spiritual competition. Not competition. Just a lot of energy. Monk was alive and busy. And it was that period. So somehow, I had to be part of that.
So, speaking of all these players that you got to play with in that period of growth, who taught you the most about jazz?
Everyone, Joe.
Yeah.
I grew up with a guy in Brooklyn. I don't know his name. If I saw him, I wouldn't know what he looked like. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We kids. This guy could play 2,000 songs, at least, for everything in G-flat.
Huh. Wow.
So I learned something from him.
Yeah. There you go.
No, I was really sick to answer your question. I learned something from everybody.
Yeah.
I want to be a giant fan. Basie taught me the blues. Basie taught me space. Basie taught me how you can say, go to the piano and give a message. Just a few notes.
Yeah.
Nat King Cole, just utter beauty. How do I describe Nat King Cole, man? I mean, when he played, just beautiful.
Yeah.
Just sheer beauty, you know.
Yeah.
And then you got the Hive Master, Sean Tatum. No comment. Don't leave that one alone. And then you got Monk with his magic and his space and his harmonies, you know. And then you got Mr. Ellington, who I discovered last. Because I was always in the Duke's orchestra. I never thought about his piano.
Yeah.
But then I heard Duke do a trio concert at the Museum of Modern Art in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Blew my mind, man.
Wow.
So that's those were the pianists that I learned, I got for each one of them. They each taught me a lot, each one of those guys, yeah.
What's the greatest thing about waking up every day?
Life. Being able to see and smell and taste and rub and stretch and walk and laugh and eat and drink and listen to music.
Cool.
There's so many beauties on this planet. There's so many beautiful things, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. So, you have gotten a lot of awards throughout your life, most recently the Doris Duke Award. Is there any award that means the most to you?
No. No, because it's like, the first award I got. And that was a long time ago. I think maybe in the 50s, something like that. But I forgot what it was. Whether it was Downbeat, whether it was something I did in the church, or I don't remember. But that was like the foundation, you know? So, I mean, each one gets green and greater, but it's almost like a spiritual flow.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that first one, it was the most powerful because first my album got an award. You know?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That kind of excitement. Well, don't misunderstand me. I mean, what's happened lately is simply incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, Duke at the university, I got a Guggenheim, and I can't tell you how important that is for me because my life has always been trying to find out more about my son, more about this music, more about my mom and pop and my great grands who I've never seen, what they've done, you know. It's been my life, you know. It comes out of music and being able to know Duke and being able to know Monk, being able to know Colin Hawkins, Roy Evans, you know. I got Leslie Young for a minute, you know. So just being around these people,
I think
something.
Yeah, without a doubt. So, what is left to accomplish for you?
I don't know. It's always been the same. How we can get to our children. How we can develop in the school system, in the educational system.
Yeah.
Start off with the history of Africa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And have young people understand that we all come from there. The whole human race began there.
Yeah.
So I think if we can develop, which is always in my life, get to the kids. I've been 5 years, 6 years old. I started with Africa and just see what happened from there and how we're all connected. You know,
yeah.
Through music, through art. I think that would be a joy because I play for 10-year-olds, I play for high school kids, college kids, and they are just so fascinating.
Yeah.
Just little stories I tell them about Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I only know a little. I lived in Morocco 7 years, then 18 countries in Africa. But Africa is like our music. It's magic. It's mystery. You keep learning all the time. You never said things you know. You don't know all the time, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the dream for me because I think it would bring us together as an earth people and bring us together by respecting each other and give us a full, deeper understanding of the planet that we live in.
Right.
It's a beautiful planet.
Yeah, it is.
You know? And Louis Armstrong and all those guests, that's what their music was all about.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if the kids got an opportunity for me to hear Louis or talk about his history or Randy Weston or Earl Hines or whatever, these African-Americans whose parents came here and chains. Now, how did they make that transition from chains to create this music?
Yeah.
I don't know how they did it.
Yeah.
I can't figure it out.
Yeah.
It's an incredible story.
Sure.
the material that came off so much pain.
Yeah.
So that's always been my life show.
Right on.
Get the music to the children so we can have a better world, we can love each other. We realize Mother Nature is the true artist. She paints all the colors.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we look like we look.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And she has her order of the galaxies, of the planets and whatnot, so.
Yeah.
Don't get me started talking. I'll talk until tomorrow.
I love it, man. I love it. You're...
But it's just love. Mom and Pop gave me love, gave me respect, gave me dignity. They were wonderful people. And everybody came to my house. My dad would cook, and all the other people would come to the house, all kind of people.
Yeah.
Get what they look like. Come and eat. Come and eat. My mom would say, well, that's how we grew up. They didn't have money.
Yeah.
They had a strong spiritual culture. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
They came out of African civilization, see. So that's it, Joseph, man. Okay.
That's beautiful. Randy, thank you very much for your time today. You're a beautiful person. I love your music, and keep on spreading the joy, man.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to yet another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in New York, KC, and spots all over America, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Mr. Randy Weston for being a supremely wise, gifted, and happy man, making this planet better each and every minute he's alive on it. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Dimino on the iTunes Store or visit theneonjazz.blogspot.com for all things Neon Jazz. Until next time, enjoy the music, my friends.
Neon Jazz.